Welcome back to Soar Financially, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us here in the studio in Vancouver. My name is Kai Hoffman. I'm the @JRMiningGuy on Twitter and the CEO of the Soar Financial Group. I'm really looking forward to this conversation today because it's the first time we're doing it in person. My guest has been on various online formats that we've hosted over the years. It's the first time we're meeting in person. It's no other than Ross Beaty, mining billionaire, entrepreneur, and of course, chairman of Equinox Gold. Ross, it's fantastic to have you here in the studio. I have to admit, I'm a bit nervous.
I'm glad to hear that. You know, you should always be tense and excited.
It's just like a little under pressure, right? So I was worried about sleeping
too.
In. Yeah, and
me too.
Like,
a great kind of coffee. Come on.
Appreciate that. No, I'm blushing. Now I'm really nervous, okay? No, but, Ross, appreciate you coming in. I mentioned to you, like, let's start with the macro scene a little bit. Last time we had you on was about 5 months ago.
Yeah.
We did this virtually. And we call it sentiment check gold.
Yeah.
It feels like nothing's gotten really better. So
yeah.
Tell us a bit more about it.
Nothing's gold. Got better. Nothing's got worse. It's it's been a weird little 5 months, I guess. Summer is almost like it just didn't happen. You know, there was nothing that went on. Gold kind of bounced around a little bit up, a little bit down, a little bit sideways. And it hasn't been very exciting. But I'm guessing that some more exciting things are bound to happen this fall. And I'm hoping they're going to be on the, you know, on the upside. So but quite frankly, it is a bit of a wonky market right now. Things are wobbly economically. The U.S. China, you know, situation, Chinese growth. What's going on with the dollar? It could kind of go almost every way. What's going on with interest rates and the Fed? Quite frankly, it's wobbly, and I don't have a crystal ball. I don't really know precisely. I had strong convictions on gold, and generally speaking, I was right for the last, you know, say 5 years. But at the moment, I have to say the fundamentals are still pretty good. Strong demand. Flat supply, that's usually pretty good for price. And then you have all these macro things that could happen, like an easing, for example, like a decline in the dollar, like, for example, a correction in the major stock market. And all of those are going to be good for gold. But gold's in pretty good shape for producers like us, you know, 1920, 1930, 1950, in that range. It's a very good price for us. We're making good money. In fact, most of the gold space is making pretty good money. So it's okay. We're not unhappy, but I guess I have a very strong conviction gold's going to continue to shoot higher, and we'll go through its all-time high sometime soon. I don't know what soon means, but it's I'm going to say within like a year or two. Like, I have very strong conviction gold's going to blow through 20. I think it's about 2,200. That's the all-time high in current dollars.
Interesting. Yeah. Gold is. I know, it's a bit puzzling to me. I've asked that other guests in my interviews as well. Like, are you surprised that gold is actually hanging in? Because now the dollar is a little stronger, but it's hanging in there.
It's hanging in there. I know. It's doing pretty well. Like I said, I'm not unhappy with where it is. It could have gone either way, and the fact that it's still over $1,900 is actually very bullish. So when things change, it will go higher. It'll blow through 2,000, I think, and then I think maybe to new highs. So. You know, in the face of all kinds of negative sentiment, gold has done really well. And demand stays strong, and it's both investors buying, most of it's investor market, let's face it. Most investors buying gold and central banks buying gold as a store of value, long-term value, exactly what gold has always been good for. It's a different form of wealth.
Absolutely. I fully agree with all you're saying, actually. It's like 2,200. I've heard that a couple times now. So I'm curious when we'll get there. A lot of people predicted for H1 actually next year.
Yeah.
Curious
if
that happens.
Yeah.
Let's touch on silver. A little more volatile than gold. We're at 22, almost $23 again, but we touched on 25. So there's quite a few swings happening.
Yeah.
What's your opinion on silver?
Yeah. Well, silver is a very different metal than gold in many respects, in that it's fundamentally an industrial metal for over half of its demand. The other half is more or less as money for investors. But, you know, gold has 99% of its uses as a store of value, as a form of currency, whereas silver is used in so many things. And so you have to look at the industrial demand for silver and the investment demand. I always say it's a schizophrenic metal because, you know, it doesn't know where it is. It doesn't know if it's in a precious metal camp or a base metal camp. On the industrial metal side, it's a very strong world because the biggest demand now for silver is in photovoltaic cells, which is, of course, for solar power, driving huge amount of silver demand. And it's an electronic metal, so it's used in everything digital, everything electronic. And that's really driving its long-term strength as an underpinning of current prices. But the real volatility in silver will be, again, following gold. And so if gold runs, silver's going to run. If gold weakens, silver's going to weaken, but not as much, because it'll be buffered by the industrial demand. On the supply side, you know, there's not a lot of new silver coming out of new mines, so it's kind of like gold. It's kind of flatlining right now on the supply side, which is a bullish factor. If you have rising demand and flat or declining supply, you're going to have higher prices. Absolutely. So I see that happening for silver too.
No, the demand on the photovoltaic side is insane, especially apparently we're going to double-sided photovoltaics.
Yep.
So really interesting developments there. Yep. Russ, we need to talk about the sentiment in the sector. Like the mining space is completely unloved.
Yep.
I'm trying to work out a little bit why that is, right? I've wrote down one comment is margin compression, right? And of course, lack of risk capital. Like you're producing, like let's use the Equinox as an example because I have you. $1,500 all in. Right?
Yeah.
1950, let's assume 1950 gold price.
That's $600,000 a year. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But those margins used to be better on a total dollar basis.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you know, you tell me what the reasons are, because I, quite frankly, I'm puzzled. In my long career in this business, I've been in this business I've been working in the business for more than 50 years, but as running public companies since 1985. So, you know, a long time, 38 years. So, I've watched the cycles come and go, and I can say that never in my career have I seen gold equities so weakly priced relative to the gold price itself. For some reason, we have this real disconnect today between the value of the equities and the value of the metal. I've never seen it before. In fact, in the 80s and 90s, gold equities were trading at 2 and 3 times net present value. Right? And today they're trading at 0.4, 0.5, 0.6 times net present value. So that's very unlikely. It's only this year, by the way, that's really happened. And so, you know, it's very unlikely that things are going to stay like they are for very long. And you're either going to have the gold price collapse or you're going to have equities rise in value. And I would bet on the latter. I think the gold equities are really, really cheap, historically cheap, fabulous value. As you go down into the higher risk companies, from the seniors to the intermediates to the juniors, the discount is even more. So the juniors today, they can't get equity capital for exploration, for development. The intermediates have really crummy price to net present value ratios. The seniors are okay, but not as valuable as they were historically. And it's just one of those things. Buyers are on strike. And you could say there's a whole bunch of reasons, but it's kind of irrelevant. The real question is, when is it going to change? And is it going to change? Typically, in a bear market for equities, you know, there's some catalyst. And when the catalyst happens, it could be a new discovery. We've had a couple of big discoveries like Skyline that have propelled value in that exploration space. It could be the success of some good stocks that have done well, like Alamos Gold, for example. It's done really well. It's really had a good run. There's a bunch of companies like that. But it'll be some catalyst, and all of a sudden, bang, overnight, you're just going to see a doubling of kind of across the board, because the metrics are going to be there. The valuation parameters are going to all of a sudden readjust to what they have been historically. Now, what causes that sentiment? When exactly is it going to happen? I don't know. But it happened in 2016. It happened in 2012. It happened. You know, I can point to many, many times. And when it happens, you are going to want to own these stocks now, because it'll readjust before you know it. It'll readjust like instantaneously, and everybody's going to say, "Oh God, if only I bought that stock that I was looking at that seemed really cheap and really good value." But it'll be too late. So this is the buyer's market right now. There's fabulous value in the space. Historically, unprecedented in my career. I'm buying myself right now. I'm being somewhat selective, but I'm buying right now. I'm buying my own company, Equinox Gold. It's dirt cheap. There's all sorts of catalysts within that company, and there are within most companies. It could be exploration results. It could be production milestones. It could be cost reduction, that kind of thing. But it's a great time to be buying gold equities. And I don't always say that, by the way.
No, it's like, I think I remember asking you that before. It's like, no, I'm not doing much. I think you said that. Might have been the interview previous before, right? And so do you do private placements, or Yeah, I do some private placements.
Yeah, I do some private placements, but I look at management, obviously. I look at the quality of the project. I look at the stock valuation, those kind of things. And I diversify. I buy a handful. I don't just buy one or two because, you know, it is a risky game, very speculative, and you want to be a diversified portfolio if you're going to be in this game.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You mentioned before we hit record that you're going down to Denver for the Denver Gold Show. Are you going also as an investor or just as chairman?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Yeah, I'm lucky because I don't have to do any of the way the Denver Gold Show works, and actually Beaver Creek, these two very important gold shows in September, is they now have kind of dating rooms where companies in a room and investors come in every 30 minutes to have one-on-ones. And honestly, the management teams are booked in those meetings like 15 meetings a day. Like it just goes nonstop. It's a very efficient way for investors to meet management and vice versa. And then there are also meetings between large companies and small companies with the large company management teams looking at the juniors for a potential acquisition. So there's all this kind of dating going on. And luckily, I don't have to do that. So I'm able to kind of wander around, go to some of the talks, listen to some of the management teams present, talk to people about potential deals, and just do that kind of fun stuff. Just get the lay of the land, and then I can help to, you know, my role in Equinox is as chair is obviously running the board meetings, but also overall strategy, finance, sentiment change, and how that's going to change our attitude about acquisitions, about developments, that kind of stuff. Those are great conferences.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the best, you know, among the best in the whole year.
Absolutely. No, I used to go regularly, but my daughter's birthday is always in the middle of it. So I got to wait for another year. So it's on a Friday. So I can at least enjoy the first 2 days of it. So, but sentiment, you mentioned as well, like sentiment check. Like, what do you expect the mood going to be like? Because I've been looking for a GIF actually online that I could post on Twitter where you put a dollar bill in the middle and everybody jumps on it.
Yeah.
Right? That's what it feels like a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm a kind of an unrepentant bull on gold. I just love the metal. And I think, you know, it's done well. And I've generally speaking been right on getting the cycles right. So we're still in a bull cycle for gold for sure. And there's a lot of macro things that can change in the fall that will really help gold. The equities are, of course, the same kind of thing. There's going to be a sentiment change and there's going to be a revaluation. And it's going to be, I think, a very positive one upward because it's very hard for them to go down in value. You know, it's just the right time to be buying if you're looking to be an investor in the space. What that trigger is going to be, though, you know, it could be one of a dozen things, Kai. It could be a weakening of the dollar. It could be easing by the Fed. It could be more of a revaluation upwards of the Chinese market. It could be a collapse of the main markets. It could be, you know, continuing wipeout of Bitcoin. It could be all these alternative investments and people realizing, you know what, for 5,000 years, gold has actually been a very, very solid investment in terms of maintaining purchasing power. Even in the last 5 years, it has been the last 10, the last 20. Let's go back to gold. You know, it's a proven thing. Let's not toy with the meme stocks and all these other kind of flavors of the month. And let's go back to something that's historically kept its value as, you know, as just insurance. Everybody should own some gold. And actually, if you want the real leverage, you own the gold equities.
Absolutely.
The less risky, totally. The optionality, the less risky are the big guys, the best leverage and lowest risk are the intermediates like Equinox, and then the highest risk but the highest leverage are the juniors.
Well, Newmont, you can get 4.7% dividend yield right now as well, and you get the upside, right? So just
there's,
as an example,
there's a dozen companies like that. Barrick, Newmont, I mean, there's a whole Pan American, Equinox, you know, I can't wait for us to pay a dividend. It's not far out, by the way. It's not far out, but it's, you know, the only reason those dividend yields are so high is because the equity valuations are so low, right?
Yeah, but that's the opportunity.
That's the opportunity, right?
Absolutely.
For sure.
Coming back to the conferences real quick, because I wanted to ask you, like, have you heard any rumors? Is there anything happening at the conferences? I know you're tuned in, right? So it's usually a good time for a bigger announcement, either right before Beaver Creek or more often before Denver Gold.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm not really tuned in. I mean, I certainly know opportunities. You know, we're always looking for, you know, smart deals with Equinox Gold. I'm always thinking that. It's been something that I've done all my life. I've done a ton of merger and acquisition work in my career. A ton. You know, like dozens and dozens of deals. And you probably are going to see something come out of Denver. these companies, you know, the thing about mining that people always have to remember is it is a declining industry every single minute. The actual mining industry depletes its reserves every second. It's a non-renewable industry. So companies must either discover or buy in order to maintain their production or even increase their production. So it's inherently got a lot of M&A work intrinsically in it. And the other reality is scale does matter these days. It matters more than it's ever mattered. That's one of the fundamental reasons I did a lot of M&A to build Equinox Gold quickly, because scale is important. You have more liquidity for investors. You have better multiples. You have better access to big capital pools, the ETFs, for example, large investors. So there's all sorts of reasons why it makes sense today. And that's what often also drives M&A work, is the one and one is three. If you can put two companies together, each of which has, you know, high overhead, for example, put them together instantly, you got a better multiple and you get rid of all those wasteful overhead costs. You can have one instead of two. So it's really sensible if it's a true synergistic merger. The problem is a lot of them aren't. A lot of them are growth just for growth's sake, which is stupid. Or you know, and quite frankly, I made a bad decision in one of our deals to buy a company when Equinox combined with Leagold, we got stuck with a mine that was much more difficult than I had ever anticipated in Mexico, the Los Filos mine. And that's been a real headache. So we're sorting it out. It'll get sorted out, but it was definitely not the easy, you know, one and one is three deal that I hoped it would be. And so sometimes things happen. They don't always work out. But getting bigger is smart by itself. And so I expect you're going to see some deals.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I'm trying to nail you down a little bit, but it's tough, like, to see what, get some names out of you. Like, one rumor I heard this week was Barrick and AngloGold.
Yeah, well, so Barrick, I mean, you know.
People want to see something.
I saw, right? Mark Bristol last week in London, had dinner with him, and you know, he's a lovely guy, wonderful guy. I have huge, huge respect for Mark. You know, that's the one company that I don't know any of this, yeah. You know, the secrets behind the wall, but I mean, Barrick is the one company that's kind of lost out to Newmont for the sort of the flavor of the month. He has all manner of excuses for that, and I mean, Mark is great, so I'm just going to let him, you know, for his shareholders, they're happy, I hope, but I would expect something coming out of Barrick fairly soon.
Yeah.
Who knows what?
Okay, no, fair enough.
I mean, it could be First Quantum, it could be AngloGold. There's all kinds of different options.
But he likes copper lately, right? So
he likes copper.
That's
yeah.
the other direction, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Interesting, fantastic. Okay, I'm not going to grill you anymore on that.
Well,
right?
it's pure speculation.
Let's get back to Equinox Gold real quick to sort of wrap up the discussion
sure.
as well. Greenstone, how is that coming along?
Beautifully.
That's going to be a game
changer. Beautifully,
for the
beautifully, beautifully. On time, on budget. Should be producing gold very soon in the next 4 or 5 months. Yeah, so real soon. We almost finished construction. We've got an analyst tour happening today, actually, today and yesterday. We have a whole raft of people going through. So you can read what they say, you know, later this week. Yeah. But it's looking good. It's almost done. And, you know, 1.6 billion Canadian projects, a big, yeah. big mine construction. I think it's a huge credit to the team that they've built it on time and on schedule within this inflationary world and all the noise about, you know, every analyst in Toronto said we couldn't do it, we wouldn't do it, we're going to blow the budget out. And of course, they've been wrong and we've been on track. So fantastic. I'm really looking forward to that because it's a complete game changer for Equinox, right? It'll add 240,000 ounces a year to what we produce today of 600,000. It'll drop our cost. Greenstone cost will be about $800 an ounce, give or take. Our current costs are closer to, you know, $1,400, $1,500. So it's really going to make a big difference.
Oh, fantastic.
Across the board.
Yeah. And help with that NPV, PNAF multiple,
yep.
right?
So, oh, yeah, for sure.
Which is quite
for
historic.
Sure. For sure.
One thing I've noticed in the recent press release, real quick, I don't want to get into too much detail, but you put in a gold collar. Can you elaborate a little bit on, because
yeah.
you also pre-sold some gold.
Yeah, we also pre-sold some gold. This is just literally for 1 year and just to reduce our risk, because the Greenstone construction is so important and we do not want to lose. And so, of course, the construction budget comes from both our treasury, mm-hmm. some debt, but it also comes from our cash flow. And we protect our cash flow by doing that collar. So we have a minimum of 1,900, a maximum of 2,100 for a very small number of ounces, but that actually protects the cash flow so we can actually, you know, complete Greenstone on budget and actually have the funding to do that.
Fantastic.
So it's just prudent financial management with a small amount of our gold, and it'll all be unwound this time next year.
Okay. You mentioned something earlier about acquisitions for Equinox, that
yeah.
you're waiting for Greenstone to add. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Is that sort of still the plan? Like, let's get Greenstone up and going
yeah,
before we look at anything else?
Well,
or looking
at I can say that we are so confident Greenstone's over the hump now. I've been frozen out of doing anything for 2 years while that's all happening. We had to make sure. Like, that was so important to get right. And we now feel very confident that is now right. So we can start looking at other opportunities. There are great opportunities in the space. But, of course, we have to be constrained by all kinds of things. But, I mean, I just want, you know, my ambition with Equinox is pretty simple. It's to build a world-class, like, senior gold producer fast. And get those multiples and get that higher valuation and get and build a really big company that has humongous leverage to higher gold prices. That's been the mission of the company, pure and simple, since day one. So far, so good. We've been penalized for 2 years with all kinds of worry about Greenstone, whether we were going to blow our budgets and take longer. Soon as the confidence in the market is there that we have actually met our targets, and it should be like this month or next month, right now, I think we're going to have a better price, and all of a sudden we're going to have opportunity to do other things if there's the right
once
value.
Once the penny drops, sort of, the market realizes, like, yep. Okay, as you said, yep. They're over the hump.
So next month, you know, soon. I don't know exactly when it's going to be, but definitely if there's a really good opportunity, we'll, okay. You know, we want to see
it. In the Americas? You're going to
stay? Yeah, we're going to stay in the Americas. Yeah, I'm not wild about Africa. Yeah, yeah. For example.
One very last question I wrote down is that I've been hearing a lot about Brazil lately.
Yeah.
You're obviously very active in Brazil. You have a few mines in Brazil.
Yeah, too. Four?
Yeah. Right? So what's the landscape like?
Oh, Brazil.
It seems like it's coming up as a new mining jurisdiction.
Brazil is fabulous. You know, I mean, I've worked all my career in the Americas. You know, every single country I've worked in Central America, North America, South America. I just know the country's backwards and forwards. And, you know, I used to love Peru. Peru's a bit topsy right now. I used to love Chile. Chile's upside down. Argentina's always been a mess. Bolivia, it used to be a mess. It's actually been pretty good for the last 10 or 15 years, but it has a lousy investment climate, generally speaking, because they have a socialist government, but they've actually been very friendly to mining. Ecuador is a bit of a mess. Colombia is a bit of a mess. So, you know, all these countries that used to be really good for mining, they're uncertain. There's all kinds of, you know, noise and a lot of economic nationalism by let's just say, how can I be polite here? Not very investor-friendly governments. That's the politest way I can put it. And all the while, Brazil has got better and better and better. So we've been there 5 years. I never was operating in Brazil until 2018. We built our first mine there. We acquired three more. We built our first mine. We acquired three. We sold one and we built another one. So now we have four. It's a great place. We have 4,000 people in Brazil. 100% Brazilian. They're great engineers, geologists. Capital markets are good there. I love it.
Fantastic.
It's great.
No, it's one of the themes.
It's a lot of fun too. Yeah. Really nice, you know, nice people.
I was there when I was 11 the last time, so I need to go again.
Go again. But, it's great.
I need to go on a site visit.
Good
I
beaches.
Need a good reason.
Well, so, you're always welcome.
Fantastic. Everybody heard that. So, no, Ross, fantastic. Like, I love chatting in person. It's just very different energy. It's so much more fun.
Pleasure.
I think. So thanks so much for coming to the studio.
Happy
really
to do
insightful.
So.
And we'll have to do this again.
It required a 2-block walk. Yeah, so, you know, if it was three, I don't know. But 2 blocks is fine.
Glad we're downtown Vancouver here. So fantastic. Ross, thank you so much for coming in.
And, my pleasure.
Let me switch the camera over here to this one. And thank everybody for tuning in. Thank you so much for watching SOAR Financially. We hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did, of course. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. There's a box right there. It says subscribe on it. It's that square box. We really appreciate it because now 80-85% of you watching are not subscribed. Let's change that. It helps me bring guests like Ross Beattie here on the program more regularly, perhaps, or and guests of other great caliber as well. And really appreciate it. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll be back with more.